This is William Harrison speaking. I'm here on behalf of Richard Diggs, Tony Leader, and Joseph Russell, producer, director, and associate editor, respectively, of Radio Reader's Digest. They are offering a new program for your consideration. During the final cycle of the Digest, a new feature was incorporated called Surprise Endings. This feature excited so much audience interest and acclaim that Diggs, Leader, and Rustle became convinced that therein lay the material and substance for a complete half-hour series to be called Surprise Endings, a surprise package in every story. So certain were they of the inherent possibilities of such a show that they have obtained the rights to it. Now, before we further discuss the merits of this new full-length show, let's listen to two of the short spots taken directly off the air that gave birth to the idea. Surprise Ending. Truth is stranger than fiction, and the best example we know of this is an underworld story orchestrated to a theme from Ilko. Surprise ending and all. The Chicago police have finally cracked a savage outbreak of holdups and robbery. The leader, a man known as Il Diavolo, has been sentenced to death. And also sentenced to death was the man who betrayed him, his henchman, named Viana. Viana was to be hanged first. And the night he went to the gallows.
Hey, Corelli, listen. Viana's singing, huh? Say, it is Viana. Singing on his way to the gallows. Isn't that kind of queer?
Yeah. As if he thought he was going to get a pardon or something.
Well, he ain't. Enough to give you the creep.
The newspapers duly noted that Viana, the squealer, went to the gallows singing the Miserere. But the fact was quickly forgotten by the papers, the public, and the police. Until one day, a few weeks later, the prison detective heard the same song being sung by the man Viana had betrayed. The gang leader, Il Diavolo, as his mobsters called him.
Hey, you're rather cheerful this morning, aren't you, Diavolo?
Ah, my good friend, Detective Corelli. So you are in the death house too, huh?
I'm just passing through. I'll be leaving by a different door, and you will.
Hey, you see, I can laugh at your little joke.
You're pretty cheerful, aren't you, singing that song?
That song? What's wrong with that song?
Didn't you know? Viana sang it the night he was executed.
It's a beautiful melody. Even when a rat sings it.
Where do you get the strength to sing it?
Strength? I am very strong. They treat condemned men very well here in this jail.
I heard you've been starving yourself. Lost 30 pounds.
I'm going to die. Why must I eat?
No reason. I was just wondering offhand why you're so chipper on practically no food at all.
What do you want, Corelli?
Easy, Diablo. Easy. I'm not the kind to rub it into a guy behind bars. Dorty, sing all you want. But I still think it's funny you're singing the same song as the guy who put you in.
And so Il Diavolo continued to sing more and eat less as the night of his execution neared. And at last the night arrived. The condemned man's actions were more than ever the subject of speculation down at Chicago's police headquarters.
You wouldn't recognize him, Corelli.
So I hear, Captain. Lost 50 pounds, the boys say.
60?
60? Mm-hmm. Oh. Still gets me why he's deliberately starving himself. Still think that same darn song.
Police headquarters.
Hello, police headquarters?
Yes, police headquarters.
Listen to me carefully. Diavolo's friends are going to grab his body right after the hanging and revive him.
What's that?
Yes, and they know they can do it because they did it once before with Viana.
They revive the honor.
Get to the jail before they carry out Il Diavolo's body.
Who is this?
A friend of Viana's.
A friend of Viana's? Wait a minute. Wait. Hello. Hello. He hung up.
A friend of Viana's. A girl's voice saying, Diavolo's friends are going to grab his body right after the hanging and revive him. They know they can do it because they did it for Viana. It sounded mad, insane. But good policemen know that much of life is mad and insane. A crazy, meaningless joke though it might be, they threw a cordon of police around the jail. And after a long period of patient waiting in the dark shadows, they saw a long black hearse turn into the alley that led to the jail. They ordered it to stop, and inside found hot water bottles, heating pads, hypo syringes, and a pull motor. Equipment for bringing a man back to life. That much of the story was reported by the newspapers. But what had happened to Viana trickled back, piece by piece, from the underworld. The underworld reported that the night Viana was hanged, his body was taken away ostensibly for burial. But actually...
Well, Doc, what's a good word?
Quiet, Joe. Doc's taking Deanna's pulse.
Hey. You mean Deanna's really alive?
Quiet.
Well, Doc,
his pulse was much stronger, Joe.
You mean you really brought this rat back to life?
Life never left him.
His neck wasn't broke by the rope, huh?
If it had been, I wouldn't have been working over him for the last hour.
Look, Doc, he's trying to talk. What's he trying to say?
Quiet.
Don't get bossy, Doc. Diavolo's paying you plenty for this little experiment. He can talk. The guy who got hung can talk.
He's not out of the woods yet, Joe. Get him tied.
Carla, thank you, Fiona.
How do you mean, Joe?
Leaving your door unlocked. Just holler and come in when somebody knocks.
Oh.
It ain't healthy for you to have it known you're alive. Il Diavolo's paid a lot of dough.
Joe, that's what I can't understand.
What?
Yeah, when you got word to me in prison that you were going to do this, it made me so happy I wanted to sing, but I don't understand. Why would Il Diavolo go to all the trouble to bring me to life again?
Well, I guess it's time you heard. You feeling strong enough to take it?
Oh, yeah. Feeling fine, Joe.
Glad to see your girl last night.
Was never so happy.
Yeah, good, good. She's a nice kid. Well, it's this way, Viana. Il Diavolo got figuring that maybe you were sorry for Rabin. You was sorry, wasn't you?
Oh, Joe, I didn't mean to tell the cops.
Yeah. All of us ain't made tough enough to stand a grilling.
Yeah, that's it. I couldn't help it. I couldn't...
Don't take on, kid. It's all right. Il Diavolo understood. Then he figured you could still do him a favor to make up for it. You see, he once read about guys in Europe who'd been hung and lived to tell about it. He's got a long memory. He remembers it, see? So he tipped us off from the clink to get Doc and try the experiment with you. Because you're a lightweight, see? He figures maybe you'll go down to the trap and a noose will jerk tight and choke you, but
no,
not break your neck,
no,
see?
Please don't, Joe. Please. Oh, it was awful.
Well, anyway, that's what we did. We proved a lightweight maybe doesn't get his neck broke. So Il Diavolo starts starving himself. He's already lost 60 pounds. We think his chances are pretty good. Don't you?
Wait a minute. You mean... You going to try the same thing with him? Tonight?
It's got to be tonight, Deanna. That's when they're hanging him.
And got everything all set, huh?
Everything but one thing.
No. What are you going to do with that gun? I'm
going to take care of a rat.
No, but do I?
Real Diavolo wants to sing tonight when he walks the news. Just like you did. But he won't feel like singing if a rat like you is still alive, oh, Diana.
What are you going to do?
Throw him in the lake, boys, and make it snappy. No good rat. As Diablo walked to the gallows that night, he knew that a rat had been taken care of. But he never knew that his specially equipped hearse had been taken care of, too, by the police. This, says Chicago's Underworld, is the true story of Diavolo's plot to cheat death on the gallows. A story orchestrated with a theme from Il Trovatore.
With a Broadway hit on his hands and a bad case of jitters, has just flagged Joe, the bartender.
Joe.
Yeah?
Give me another straight. Make it double this time,
eh? Yeah, Jimmy.
Thanks, Joe. Hey, what's that fella doing over there by the jukebox?
Him? Oh, he's just another customer putting a nickel in a slot.
Oh. That's what I was afraid of.
You ought to be proud, Jimmy. All the time they play nothing but that number you wrote. They don't want nothing else. But I want you to listen now. Always the same it is. Strictly from heaven, my baby's in my arms.
Oh, I give up. I just can't duck it.
Hey, Jimmy, watch out. You're spilling your drink.
Oh, wait a minute. I'd better pick it up with both hands.
With shapes like that, you ought to see a doctor.
There's nothing a doctor could do for me, Joe. I'm being followed, hunted, tracked down, pursued.
Being followed, huh? Who's following you, Jimmy?
What's that song? It's weird. It ain't human. I never should have wrote it down.
Why not? What's the matter with the song?
Nothing the matter with the song, Joe. It's what they're calling me. The Tin Pan Alley Stephen Foster.
Oh, that's what they're calling you now, huh?
Yeah, that's what hurts. Of all the guys they could have thought of, they got a pick on Stephen Foster.
What's the matter with Foster?
Foster was a genius, that's all. Swanee River, my old Kentucky home, genie with a light brown hair. Only I ain't no genius. That's what's making this drink shake in my hand.
You better have another. Here, this one's on the house.
Thanks.
I'll have one with you. Here's how. Now, this Foster guy, what's he got to do with the way you feel?
All I tell you, Joe, see, that song has made me 30 grand in the last couple of months. And you know what Foster died with? You know how much dough he had?
How much?
He died in a free ward over at Bellevue Hospital. And he had 38 cents in his pocket. Yeah, the guy that wrote Old Folks at Home. 38 cents and a slip of paper on which he wrote down his last words. The title of a new song he wanted to write, Dear Friends and Gentle Hearts. And that's as far as he got.
Don't let it get you down, Joe. Those things happen, and the guy's been dead a long time now, ain't he?
Oh, 70, 80 years.
Well, so why worry?
Listen, I got to get this out of my system sometime. I might as well spill it to you.
Go ahead. Don't spill it.
Only don't blame me if it gives you the horrors like it give me. The way it is, like you said. Before I wrote this song, I'm a bum.
I didn't say you were a bum.
No, it's all right. It's okay, Joe. I'm a bum. I'm living in a lousy little room and house down on the Bowery. Number 15 it is. I got no more future than a Jap flyer. Since a kid, I got the crazy notion I'm a songwriter. And it don't matter that nothing ever comes out, because Always I figure there's one great tune locked up inside of me. And I'm still figuring that way when I hit the Bowery. It ain't what you might call an inspiration. From dawn to midnight, I get loud radios and hollering and scrapping in 10 languages. So every day I wait till about midnight, when everything's quiet, and I start into work. Maybe after a while I might have hit on something. The only trouble is the guy upstairs from me. A guy with a piano. Right away I know what it is. It's a guy working with a piano. He's a songwriter, just like I'm a songwriter, trying to get at that one great tune inside of him. Only he can't. He gets nowhere. And me, I can't concentrate any more on my own work. When that piano above me begins, I sit up tense and listen. He strikes an opening chord and holds it. Then I run up the scale. He repeats that last note. He dangles it. I'm on my feet, pacing the floor. By now, the strain is killing me. The guy has got to find the next note. Only he can't find it. So he waits a while. And he starts all over with another chord. This goes on night after night. After a while, I get the idea this guy in a room upstairs has got it in for me. I never even seen him, wouldn't even know the guy. But I figure he found out about how I was going to write that one great tune, and so he's sitting up there torturing me and laughing to himself. One night, I know I can't hold on long. I get to looking down a ventilator chair. It's four flights down, high enough. I'm pacing up and down the floor. The strain's getting worse and worse inside. I'm ready to jump out of the window any minute. And all of a sudden, the piano stops. I sit down on the edge of the bed and wait. It's about 3 in the morning. I'm still waiting when I hear the clock strike 5:30. Now, this is getting worse than before. You never stop this long. I lie there tense, waiting for him to start again. I can't hear a sound. I feel any minute something inside my head is going to snap from the strain. And then it happens. He starts again. Suddenly, I'm on my feet listening. He starts to run. I hold my breath. He goes right on. He don't stop. He's over the run, into the melody. The music fills the room and floods out over the rooftops. It seems to swell right up to the sky. The guy keeps pouring it out, and I just stagger around. Not just listening, but breathing it in and walking through it and feeling it on my skin. And all the time I'm laughing and crying and nodding my head like an idiot. It's music like I never heard before. Da-da-da. The guy keeps playing it over and over again, with variations of things. And he keeps saying something new, something different, and beautiful. I guess there was nothing more to say. I just stood there, dazed, happy. And then all of a sudden, I knew I had to see the guy. I got to tell him I heard it. I got to look at the guy who struck that melody. So I slam out of my room and bound up them rickety wooden stairs and knock at the door of the room. There's no answer. No light's on. I knock louder. Still no answer. I can't wait any longer. I back up and then slam right up against the door. There wasn't nobody in that room. Not even a piano. Nothing at all. The room where the music came from was empty.
Listen, fella, you better have another drink. Maybe we both better have another drink.
Thanks, John. So, maybe you see now why I got it there.
Well, what happened then?
Well, so the landlady comes pounding up the stairs with a couple of cops, and they find me standing there breathing hard and staring into that empty room. So she explains to the cops there ain't nobody living on this floor at all. It hasn't been for years. Me, I get out of there fast. All I can think about is the tune. I can't get the tune off my mind.
The same tune everybody's playing now over the radio and all, the tune on the jukebox?
Yeah. Strictly from heaven. Before me, there was nothing to do but write the words.
Yeah, but what has this here Stephen Foster got to do with it?
Well, that's what I was going to tell you, Joe. You see, down on the Bowery, I lived in this dump at number 15.
Yeah, sure, number 15.
Well, listen, Joe. Yesterday, somebody sends me a book about Stephen Foster. It says Stephen Foster was living on the top floor of number 15, the Bowery, before he died in a hospital ward at Bellevue.
The two 10-minute surprise endings you've just heard were weird, mysterioso stories. But the new series of half-hour length twisters will include suspenseful comedies, romances, and straight dramas, each with its surprise ending. Further, these expanded stories will allow for more scope, complications, and development. Surprise endings will have a special opening format of its own, designed to tease the curiosity of the audience and challenge it to guess the surprise ending. We guarantee at least one shock ending to every story, and often there will be double or even triple twists. The producers of surprise endings suggest the possibility of adding a star to the program. Their selection would depend on two considerations. Either you would want an actor who has been identified with the suspenseful, for instance, Joseph Cotten, who would narrate and play the leading role, or a man with a literary identification, such as Clifton Fadiman, who would comment on the source material and act as narrator. And here is a further idea which you may wish to consider, an idea for audience participation. At the end of each week's program, the announcer would give a 30-second summary of next week's plot with the surprise ending omitted. Listeners would be invited to send in surprise endings of their own, and the best one would be used in the dramatization, with a prize awarded for it and the name of the winner announced. Thus, surprise endings could be based on prize endings from the listening audience. Surprise Endings is offered as a package by Tony Leader, director of Words at War, Radio Reader's Digest, and Now It Can Be Told. Richard Diggs, producer of Radio Reader's Digest, former editor of The Adventures of the Thin Man and Woodbury Hollywood Playhouse. And Joseph Ruskell, associate editor of Radio Reader's Digest and writer of Camel Caravan, Theater of Romance, Cavalcade of America, and others. Surprise Ending, a surprise package in every show.